You're able to hear me okay, right?
Yeah.
I've got a microphone plugged in. I just want to make sure it was working. Cool. Well, good to see you. So far, I haven't heard from anybody. Let me just check email. Sometimes people will let me know if they're not going to be able to be here.
Okay.
Yeah, no emails. So they may either join us later or it may just be the big two today. So we can kind of jump into whatever interests you today if you'd like.
Yeah, okay. Sure. Let's see. What if I got, you know, really I'm thinking about just things in the pipeline. Yesterday was a pretty interesting, you know, outcome of the meeting that we had. We spent some time in the meeting really just working on one issue and for about an hour. Plus, then we get out of the meeting and talked about some other things, just whatever water cooler talk. And then before I was ready to leave, one of the guys pulled me aside and said, you know, I really think John is an obstacle in terms of getting this resolved. And he just went through a whole thing and he told me, you know, and what he said made sense. So ultimately, he's going to pursue a side conversation with John to see if he can get John on the page. So I said to him, I said, you know, geez, why did you bring that up? Because we spent really the whole meeting talking about it. He goes, well, I like to think about things before I say things. He goes, so, you know, I had some time to think about it in the last hour. He goes, and I think that's going to be the better solution. I said, I don't disagree with you. You know, I said, so I guess, I don't know. But it felt like we spent a lot of time on that, everybody's time. And he had this, you know, issue he wanted to address with John. John was there. He could have addressed it probably openly, but I guess he wanted more time to think about it. So I don't know if there's any avoidance of that, but just something to think about. It's kind of, you know.
Yeah, great observation. it's very possible that people need time to think. That's fine. You just want to be sure that that's actually what really happened. You know, there could be other reasons that he's not going to tell you, like fear of political issues or retribution or making a mistake or any of those things. And you can only know that as you get to know this guy. But one of the things that I think you'll have to, you want to keep doing is just encourage them, you know, like, hey, look, I appreciate you needed time to think. That was a full hour. You got to think faster than that. You know, like you can pull it out of them and just be like, we're literally, if you have the answer, if you knew that answer, we're wasting a lot of time.
Right.
And so I understand and respect you may not have had that answer, but if you had that answer and you didn't speak up, my expectation is you will use the meetings for these kinds of conversations.
Yeah.
We're all busy going in lots of different directions. So whenever you possibly can, I need you to jump in the ring with us. And that's going to be important going forward.
What he said, yeah, that's interesting. That's a good observation. What he said was that there's another guy named John in the meeting, not the John that he was referring to, there's two Johns there. And, the other John, he said, you know, I'm not like John Val. John Val tends to talk, and then, you know, gets himself in a little bit of trouble, which he does occasionally. He kind of, you know, overdoes it, gets overzealous, commits to things and has to back off of them, stuff like that. He says, so I'm not like John Val. So I tend to think about things to make sure when I'm saying it, you know, I feel settled before I start getting into it. So.
Yeah, good. And I think you just say, yeah, I appreciate you're different. We're all different. I can make a space for that. I want to encourage you to risk a little bit more than you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell them that. Just say, yeah. Like, I want to encourage you to risk more than you are currently.
What do you think about during the meeting too? Like, I was thinking about this afterwards, just saying something along the lines of, hey, does anybody disagree with what the solution? Because I'm not feeling, you know, do we have 100% buy-in here? Is there anybody that's sort of disagreeing with where we're at this point? Because I want to make sure before we walk out of here, we don't have a 15-minute water cooler conversation an hour from now that flips everything that we work towards over.
Absolutely. That is absolutely what you want to get in the habit of doing, is to say, we're going to have all the conversations we need to have in this meeting.
Right.
And we're going to either agree that we haven't agreed, or we're going to find an agreement. And whatever we agreed to, that's it. We're moving forward. So this is your chance to speak about it or not. You know, if you feel comfortable about it, that's the way to go. Not every issue can be resolved that way. Sometimes you're going to say, hey, I understand we all need a little time to think about it. But if you sense that anybody reasonably should be able to come to a conclusion, then you don't want to manage your entire team to that one person's anxiety. Like if he's just anxious and like, well, I had the idea at the beginning, but I'm just anxious and I didn't want to share and I didn't want to overcommit or whatever. You just got to be like, yeah, I get it. That's hard. I need you to commit.
So what if we get into a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a heated disagreement, right? Because what happened was real quick, the guy, John, who he was talking about, his name is John Blacker. And it makes no difference if I share names because you'll never know them anyway. So it's all good. John Blacker, he has his license on the line. So he's the one who's pulling permits, things like that. The other people that were going to have going out and doing the work, if they do anything wrong, it falls under his license, John Blacker's license. And so Chris, the guy that I was talking, the manager I was talking to, was saying, John's making it too difficult. He's telling us that all these people have to be trained to a certain degree. We have all this backlog we can't get to. And as he kept on bringing up suggestions, John was shooting him down 1, 2, 3. And one of the suggestions was to use one of our subcontractors to go back. The subcontractor that we use has plenty of capacity, so they can go back and nail down these 14 jobs that we have. We have $200,000 of backlog that needs to get polished off. We have no manpower to go back and do it. So Chris's suggestion was, hey, we'll send, you know, one of our subs back to do it. And John was like, no, I don't trust them. I don't trust this one. I don't trust that one. I was conceding to the fact that John, I gave John authority when he came in to protect his license. You know, I recruited John and said, hey, when you come in, you will be the quality guy, you know, protect your license. I'm not going to shoot you down on that. So I was protecting what I, living up to what I said. Chris afterwards said, hey, he's too much. He's, we should be able to use one of our subcontractors. And then when John goes out there, if that job doesn't pass his, you know, his standard, we'll deal with it at that point, but he should wait and see. So anyway, you know, that was the kind of conversation he would have been calling John out saying, hey, your standards are way too high.
I think that's a fair reality. So it sounds like John is a little bit of a dominator in a group. Is that fair to say?
No, he's not. He just because he has, you know, authority over that quality control process, he wants control over it. And his vision of is real tight. I'm going to hold on to that control. No, everybody has to meet my standard. You don't meet my standard, you know, we're not going to move forward with that because it's my license. It's on the line. And I'm not allowing people to do shoddy work under my license. That's his kind of thing. Chris is like, they're not doing shoddy work. You know, that what John's portraying is not shoddy work.
Yeah, good. So yeah. If John is not a dominating person, yeah, and just occupying the perspective that he wants to occupy, sure, and this other guy just is a little bit intimidated and doesn't know if he's going to get his argument across, yeah, I think you got to challenge him to say, you got to show up to those meetings and push back if you need to push back. And you've got to risk being wrong. You got to risk losing. You've got to risk some things when you come to these conversations. We're all doing that. We're all coming in here. We're coming with our perspective. I expect everybody to show up and talk about it in the meeting. You wouldn't want somebody else to come up to me after you're done talking and tell me something about you. You'd rather it happen in the meeting, wouldn't you?
Right.
Like reverse the roles a little and just be like, what if people came up to me after every meeting and talked about you? Yeah. I don't want that. I want them talking to you in the meeting.
Right.
And so whenever possible, I need you to show up. I need you to really, because you got some great ideas and I need those ideas.
Right.
So I appreciate you've got some anxiety, but I'm going to need you to push yourself.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a good point. I think that would have saved, you know, there's no harm done other than the fact we wasted an hour.
All right. But yeah, what you're talking about isn't about harm. It's literally about you're setting precedent and culture. Mm-hmm. And there are some companies for whom meetings are a rubber stamp, where decisions are made at a water cooler and meetings are used to rubber stamp it. And there are other cultures where meetings are where work actually happens. Decisions get made and they hold. Mm-hmm. And you do not want to create a culture where meetings are a rubber stamp. You want to create a culture where meetings are real, decisions that are made there hold.
Right. Okay. All right, fair enough. Yep, that works.
So just a few thoughts.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Michelle, welcome.
Hmm?
I was just welcoming.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
How are you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Good. Yeah. So stuck in a time loop of the same each week, but just, yeah, the timing of this meeting is very difficult for me as it comes after another meeting that has a large group of people. Neither meeting can be moved. And I always seem feel unprepared, which is probably part of the overall lesson. But
that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. So I'm red because I was just in a little something with a technology provider that, you know, said my thing, but I'll just have to go over their head. And that's solution. That's just what's going to happen.
So, you know, Michelle, if you need to take time between your meetings to prepare, or you just want to hop on and listen and just mm-hmm. a little bit, feel free to do that. You know, like if you're just kind of like, I need like 10 minutes just to think.
Yeah.
Come on 10 minutes later, or you can just come on and say, hey, in 10 minutes, I don't want to talk. I'm just a listener for the next 10 minutes. That's totally fine.
Yeah.
So we'll use the time how is most useful for you.
Yes, I think I'll do that for a minute.
Okay, good. All right.
But yeah, so Jeff, your meeting discussions are always very helpful, even, you know.
So with that, I'll just go back to Jeff with a couple more questions, and then you can reflect a little bit, and we'll see if there's something you want to talk about. Okay,
sound good? Yes. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Cool.
So Jeff, another question that I had for you is: do you find that you have people in the meeting who tend to monopolize the conversation, or do you find that people are pretty balanced and time doesn't get away from you?
No, I wouldn't. John, I would say, you know, it's one, the other guy, John Val, tends to be very vocal. You know, no matter what topic comes up, he's got his input, you know, that takes a little bit of time for him to get through, but I don't know if he really monopolizes it, but he does, you know, he's more vocal. And then you got other people. I've had a couple of people at the last meeting who still work during the meeting, not the managers, but this other guy, John Fox. Think about this, three Johns in there, actually, in that one meeting. So I'm just thinking about that now. So, you know, John Fox, he's got sort of a supportive role in the team. So, you know, if he comes in and he's banging around on his computer, I let him. And then when I do call on him, I say, hey, John, can you pull up that report? He kind of has more access to the reports and things like that. So he'll chip in and, you know, be working on something while we're doing the rest of our meeting. But he very seldom has anything to contribute when it comes to actually vocalizing any solution. But he sits in on the meetings. So I guess some people who are like that, the people who I really want engaged are the managers and the, you know, the people who are influencers. And, but I don't think I have anybody who dominates now.
Okay. All right. Well, because that's another issue with a set of solutions that we could walk through, but it sounds like you don't need them. So that's good. I'm glad you're working well.
The only thing, the other thing that's on my mind right now is I've been working with the guy that I report to, Chris, my boss, and just trying to, I surfaced it last week saying, hey, I don't know how long I'll be here because, you know, I've got a lot of stuff going on. So he knows about my situation. I said, so I just think it would be really good to take full advantage of what I can provide, you know? So right now, if I were to look at all my time spent, I think maybe 65% of my time is doing stuff that I would say is not directly correlated to a real impactful improvement to the model, to the business strategy, to any, you know, the things that are going on. I'm delivering things that you want in the way that you want them. I said, but for example, I said, we had a marketing meeting. Honestly, I could get that marketing piece done 15 minutes, 30 minutes with an outside vendor and meet your standards, your logo brand standards. That meeting, I'm an hour and a half into it over 3 days. Still trying to rein in people to believe that what I'm saying is real. You know, people are testing me, challenging this, that, and everything. I said, so it's just, how do you want to use me? You know, and I think that I should have my own point marketing person, maybe from your marketing team that's dedicated to my team. So I can actually just influence that person, let that person go back and fight the battles. So I'm not dealing with five marketing people trying to bring them on board. I said, because, you know, and I'm really just trying to give you the most for your money. That's all I'm really after. Is that I like winning. I just like improving things and helping other people, you know, get better at what they're doing. I said, so, you know.
And how did he respond?
he listened and said, you know, he would, you know, take it back and, you know, he pushed back a little bit too. He said, I think sometimes, what do you say? I think sometimes, Jeff, you don't want to be, oh, how do you call it? Report up. You know, I don't know how he got that. That was from the meeting. Again? He said, sometimes I feel like you don't want to report up.
Oh, okay. You know, like,
report up. And I think that was because we got into that big squabble. That big squabble.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And I said, no, it's, you know, there's time definitely that I'm wasting reporting up too. I said, because out of all the metrics that I report up on, I would think there's maybe 5 out of 35 that actually change my behavior that I'm focusing on that would change my behavior. A lot of them I don't even really understand. They're not even stuff that I would actually track because I'm not even sure what meaning they have behind them. And I said, I haven't bumped into anybody who knows what they really are tracked for. You know, I said, so, you know, there's probably 5 metrics that move things, but not 35. I said, so all that stuff takes time to put together for you. I'm just trying to be real. I said, I'm just trying to, you know, to give you the most. That's what he said. You know, that's when he said he wasn't sure whether I didn't like reporting up.
Well, that was after you said too many KPIs.
Yeah, too many KPIs.
Got it. Got it.
Yeah.
And so he said, yeah, you don't like reporting up. Got it. And you didn't say in response to that. You just.
No, I just said, no, I don't think it's just a reporting up. No, I'm not going to disagree with that, Chris. I don't like reporting up. I said, I won't. Yeah, I'm not going to fight that. I said, no, I don't. But it's more, it's not just the reporting up. I said, it's just the fact that I want to move the needle. There's things that are fundamentally not right. And I want to move the needle. I want to move the needle, you know, so, and all that stuff takes time. So
does he agree with you that the 35 KPIs are not things that he needs or looks at?
He didn't disagree with that. You know, he didn't say, oh yeah, no, do we, Jeff, I mean, come on, those KPIs are critical. You know, he knows.
Okay.
He knows they're not. You know, if I'm not using them and I'm running the whole thing, how could they be to the point where they're really mission critical? They really can't be. I mean, you know, they're kind of KPIs that he thought about as an outsider looking in.
Got it.
You know what I mean? Like just maybe a feel good that he feels has got a handle on something, but they're not even really the way that I would measure it. You know?
Yeah. So, you know, what you're talking about is all like KPIs are also kind of about dashboards.
Yeah.
And there's kind of a philosophy about dashboards, which is, and this would be a worthwhile conversation for him to say, look, my job is, whether I like reporting up or not, is not material. I have a responsibility. My responsibility is to provide you with a cockpit that allows you to fly this plane.
Yep.
And that cockpit needs to have the right dials and gauges, and all the gauges and dials need to be hooked up properly.
Right.
So I'm effectively providing you a dashboard so you can make sure you're flying the plane the right way. Right. And I can make advice and, you know, consult with you and all that, but you need that. Building a dashboard, the best dashboards are always those that provide a high information to action ratio. Mm-hmm. So you only want information you can act on.
Yeah.
So my question for you is, you and I can have a really meaningful debate about what information you can act on, but it matters to me. What matters to me is what you need in order to act, because the rest is just going to be noise, and there's too much noise in the world, in the system, to fly a plane. You don't need blinking lights that you can't do anything about.
Yeah.
You need blinking lights you can actually act on.
Yeah, like that.
And so you would say that you would, and the way you would say, you know, what do you act on? You could say the easiest way, the place to start is for you to tell me, what questions do you have each week or each month or each whatever? What questions would you want answered? And let me write all those down. And then I'll be thinking about, okay, where can I get the answer to that question? Well, the answer to that question is this KPI and this KPI, these two together divided into this. And so that, there you go. We got that question answered. We're building a new dashboard based on the questions you want answered and information you can act on. So right. You could say, well, I want to know this too. And you're like, cool. How would knowing the answer to that change any decision you might make? And he goes, well, I don't really know. I just like knowing it. You're like, okay, let's put that at the bottom then, because we're going to prioritize the information you can act on.
Right.
And so that's another way of you learning to manage up, is you're giving him guardrails and bumpers so that he's really focused on the thing that's best for him. And yep. That, look, this dashboard body, there's a body of knowledge around how to build dashboards. And right. What I just told you is at the heartbeat of that art form of dashboard building. And it's a really simple, succinct thing that you can bring, which is, do you have a really good information action ratio?
Yep. I like that. By the way, I didn't actually tell him that I didn't like reporting. I just laughed when he said it. You know, he said, you don't report it up. I just chuckled. I didn't say anything to him.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I think a chuckle might have been a little bit of a tell, but you know, I did not actually say it.
I think it's good. You don't need to say it, but I think you come back to him and you're like, hey, just to be really clear, it's not material whether I like reporting up or not. What is material is what I'm responsible for.
Yeah.
And I think my responsibility is this. Do you agree? Okay. And if that is my responsibility, then let me help you build a dashboard that helps you fly the plane.
Right.
And the way that you build a dashboard is information and action needs to be really matched. So I'm going to want from you, I'm just going to take notes, and I want you to tell me, what questions do you have? Forget about the dashboard and all the KPIs we currently use. Let's start fresh and go, what questions would you have about our performance? Mm-hmm. And you go, well, I would want to know this. And you go, great. And if you knew that, what action might you take if you had that information? Well, I might, you know, dial up the budget, or I might fire that person. Great. That sounds like a high level of action you can take on that information. Let me install that. Let me go find that data. Let me call it. Let me collect it. And let me report it to you in a way that you can actually act on it. Okay. What's the next thing you care about? And just go through and build it. And you could end up with a really effective dashboard that you're collecting only the data that matters the most.
Yeah. We have a meeting tomorrow. So that's when I do my weekly meeting with them. So tomorrow I'm going to try to, you know, engage them in a conversation like that.
Good. Yeah, that'll be really good.
Yeah, try to help us get focused on, because I just intend to go with the flow. This is the way these guys do it.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with it, but I do go along with it but then it just takes up all my time.
Yeah, then you can say that. You can say, look, if you're really committed to this perspective, I'll execute it. I don't think you're getting the most bang for your buck from me. I think you can get a better bang for your buck. And with your permission, I'd like to show you how.
Right.
And so the way I would show you that is we'd have a conversation about building a really effective dashboard where you can make decisions based on the information.
Yep.
And then that's you being a really good reporting up person.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then I think some of the things they might, you know, be able to do is maybe give me a dedicated marketing person, or some of the other things too, hopefully, you know, would help. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, I have quite a background in marketing. So if you want to talk about marketing and how to communicate with marketers, I have some ideas about that.
oh, good. I need them.
Yeah. Let's dig into that if we have some time. Let me just check in with Michelle and just see how she's doing. She may want to just sit in with some more. That's fine. Michelle, how are you doing? Do you want to check in about anything, or you just want to be?
Yeah. Listening? No, but as always, whoever's talking seems to hit. I have a lot of issues. I really do.
There you go.
No matter who speaks, I'm like, yeah, that too. it's really a problem. But yeah, you know, the dashboard thing is really important, and I've laxed in that, really fallen behind. I started that and we got so busy. Jeff, I work in live events and in-person events, thousands and thousands of people in hotel rooms, and hotel industry is a little crazy. So we've had a lot of chaos through July, and it only just stopped. And now we're getting ready for next year. So it stopped only briefly. So, but now our work is much more calm. And we are right now cleaning up, you know, invoicing and just a lot of finance things and trying to gather those dashboard numbers. And that is another area where I think I needed to maintain that. And I found it difficult too, because of our low staffing numbers. I was pulled into the weeds. And I would say hits the nail on the head of, they did not get out of me what they're paying me. My salary and the job I was doing do not match.
Yeah.
I was doing a frontline job.
Yeah.
With an executive salary. So, okay, then, you know, but maybe when you average out the number of hours I've worked, it works itself out. But, you know, the dashboard is something I'm going to jump on ASAP, as we kind of look back and say, okay, what the heck actually did happen, and start invoicing our hotels. And we're seeing some really great numbers, but, you know, trying to get back to a proper workflow. And also, looking at moving forward with staffing and things like that about humane hours. I think someone was talking about that last week, that due to COVID, a lot of industries have been working, you know, what I would consider inhumane hours. And I've had a number of my staff pointing to that. So my next conversation is, yeah, with this amount of staff, we pulled off this, but don't expect it again, because people will just walk. They will just leave. And getting ahead of that conversation.
So have you still not been able to get in a meeting with your boss?
Nope.
Okay. And that just keeps avoiding it, basically, or just pushing it off?
So we've had a very minimal contact relationship ongoing, and it's just one thing after another due to our, you know, we're acquiring a lot and have really explosive growth, which just compounds my issues, actually. So that is still not task completed.
Does he have an assistant?
Not really. No. Yeah. One of the things has been a lot of lack of clarity of who I should be contacting when I need something, you know, I mean, other than the obvious, you know, HR for HR problems and CFO for finance discussions, but driving my department and things like that, there's a lot of cloudy lack of clarity for me.
He doesn't have an EA. He's a CEO and he has no.
Well, there is a new person that does seem to be, you know, contacted, you know, that I can reach out to, but it's not been the culture or what I've been directed to do.
Yeah, I mean, what would it be problematic? I mean, that's typically how I do it. I reach out to the assistant who has the ear of the person, and I go, hey, I need a 30-minute meeting sometime between now and this time. Can you please find some time? And then they go figure it out and they come back and they kind of get in the ear of the CEO and we get meetings scheduled. That's pretty
tough. Right. So I first have to identify if that's actually her role.
Yeah. So just reach out and say, hey, are you scheduling meetings for him? You know? And if you're not, boy, it would be a huge help to the rest of us if someone would. Mm-hmm. Because he's running too many directions. Somebody needs to wrangle him.
Agreed. Yeah. And that's just how it's been from the beginning.
Yeah. I would say that's the way I would go at it, is to start with the assistant. Does he just not respond to you, or does he say, yeah, I'll get to it, and never gets back, or he schedules it and he doesn't show up? What happens?
No, it's never a no-show situation, but I just think there's so many things in play that I don't have the line of sight to even know what priority my department is, or if we're just treading water.
But I mean, what happens when you reach out?
Sometimes I get a response, sometimes I don't. And that is very bothersome.
And what's the response you get when you do get a response, typically?
Because recently, some of the communications that I've had are about enhancements that we're adding to service our customers and to how we can apply them to some of the issues that have been that occurred in the past, and just, yeah, nothing. So it's really.
But when he responds, what does he say?
I'm trying to think of the last time we had a conversation. I don't even know how to answer that. Okay. It's so all over the place. There's no one thing I can point to. It's usually very quick oriented. And, you know, the thought is that, you know, we are okay to make mistakes and things like that. But I think my hesitation is I just, in so many areas where we're trying to scale up, I don't have clarity or what I'm supposed to be scaling up with what I have and hire people, or are we acquiring another company like mine?
Yeah, look, all I'm trying to do is strategize how to get you a meeting so you can have those conversations. So, you know, I would be sending an email, text, and I would say, I need 30 minutes. When's a good time? Before Friday of next week. Or I'd be happy to talk with your assistant if that's more helpful. I would start there. If I don't get a response a day later, I would follow up again and say, just following up, wondering when a good time is we could meet. And the reason I would do that is because you have a responsibility to get the information you need so that you don't lead, you know, drive the ship in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. He has a responsibility and obligation to give you information and context so that you can properly do your job. But he doesn't know that you need information. He doesn't understand any of it. He's busy managing 20 other fires. Your job is to continue to kind of ping him until he gets back to you. And if that doesn't work, you go indirect and you go with the, and I would go both ways. I would talk to the assistant and I would talk to him directly. And mm-hmm. I wouldn't wait for a phone call back. I would just, you know, if he doesn't get back to you in a day, follow up again with another email. That's the same thing. So there's a kind of a persistence and a repeating pattern, which says, in order for me to do my job effectively, I need 30 minutes with you. I want to make sure that I'm not heading down the wrong path.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, you don't need to tell him what you're even going to talk about. You just say, there is a handful of things that I need to talk to you about. I want to make sure I'm not going down the wrong path. It's critical that we speak sometime in the next week or whatever, mm-hmm. something like that. That's the way. I mean, if I were in your role, I would never allow, if I knew I needed to have a conversation, I wouldn't even let a week go by if I wasn't hearing back. I'd let, you know, a 24-hour cycle go by and then I'd follow up again. And I'd keep doing that until I got a response. And if he came back and he's really upset, he's like, why are you bothering me? I'm like, because you hired me to do a job. In order to do my job, we have to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whenever you want, I'll make time. But I really do need to have a conversation with you in order to effectively do my job.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with that.
Okay.
It's, I don't know. It's been a problem for a long time. And
well, part of what I'm helping you do also is you've been an entrepreneur and a business owner for a long time. And so you've not had to report up. You know, it's a lot of what Jeff and I are talking about is reporting up. And there is a kind of protocol that, and what I just described is the protocol. You literally badger your leader until they have to respond because they're just like, oh, got it. Okay. I got to get to that. But effectively what happens is you'll reach out. And then if he ignores it or doesn't hear from you, he just assumes you got it figured out if you don't keep contacting him.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
He's not thinking like, oh, I need to get back to her. He's thinking, I got a million other things to do. So you've got to be one of those million things in his ear.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is accurate. It's been a really long time since I've had to report up. And
yeah. So I just want you to know.
It's not instinct at all.
Yeah. This is mission critical. Essential part of your job now is you've got to manage up. And if you don't, and you start making mistakes, you'll be held accountable for that, not him.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because you didn't take the initiative you needed to really pin him down to get the information. You know,
right.
He'll be like, what the hell? Why did we just hit the iceberg? And you're like, well, I told you 3 days ago that I needed to talk to you and you didn't respond. I'm like, well, if I knew it was this, you know, that's the kind of thing that can happen. I'm not saying that's happening. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that's what you want to prevent is, again, your job is to be that warning light, you know, on the dashboard that keeps going off. And he can ignore it, but you've got to make sure he presses a button to actively ignore it. And the way he actively ignores it, he says, I hear you. I can't get to you for about an hour or 3 days. No problem. I'll follow up in 3 days. And you put it on your calendar and you follow up in 3 days. You said, yeah, you said we should connect in 3 days. 3 days have gone by. Let's talk. And then hits the don't bother me button again. No problem. Just keep at it. I mean, between now and next week, you should have had at least one 30-minute conversation with him, unless he's on vacation or sick or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Agreed.
Okay. So that's your homework.
Thank you. Seems to be the homework I'm never getting done, but
yeah, that homework is higher priority than you may realize. Mm-hmm. That homework needs to rise in your priority level. It doesn't take a lot of time. It just takes, you got to remember to do it.
Yeah.
So set an alarm on your phone, set a reminder, whatever you need to do. But, you know, what I would tell you to do is I'm going to hop back to Jeff to talk about marketing for a few minutes. While we're doing that, I think you should draft an email to both the assistant and your boss. And the assistant, you'll say, I need 30 minutes of time, sometime between now and then. Are you able to arrange that? She'll get back to you and let you know whether she can or not. And then you talk to the CEO and you send an email to him and you say, I need 30 minutes of your time. It's pretty critical for me to do my job. When can we meet between now and, Thursday of next week or Wednesday of next week? You give him a 4 or 5 day window that he can work from. Mm-hmm. You give him a time stamp and you make it clear that this is mission critical and you request it. So here's my suggestion. Take 5 to 10 minutes now while Jeff and I are talking and start drafting that. And then when you're done drafting it, let me know and we'll send it while you're on the phone.
All right. I may have to just, yeah.
Talk to me. No, this is important. I'm curious about what the resistance is. It's okay that there's resistance. I'm curious about it.
There is so much of, you know, it's almost like I don't even want to hear from them because it's going to either be a complete 180 on everything I've been working on. And it's been a difficult thing. In addition to complications, it's like, you know, my contract, a bonus was due, you know, there's just a lot of extra stuff in there and, which highlights the reason I get it.
Every time
I talk to him, I'm like, sometimes I feel better. And sometimes I'm just like, ugh, you know?
Yeah, I can appreciate that. And again, I don't think that our interest here is to make you feel better. Our interest is to get some work done that needs to get done. And I totally appreciate, it's a little bit like, I don't want to go to the doctor because I don't want to know that there's something wrong. I kind of feel better not knowing. I totally get that. I think that makes mm-hmm. a lot of sense. And obviously we both know the flaw in the logic, but I understand the feeling and I respect the feeling. And what I want you to know is, you should probably be having weekly 30-minute meetings with him over the next 4 weeks. And that would be one part of the conversation is to say, so you prioritize, you got things that are way more than 30 minutes, to be clear. All we're trying to do is get him for 30 minutes. We're starting mm-hmm. small. And what you're going to do is you're going to lay out, I've got all these things that you and I have to resolve and address. I want to know from you how we can best do that. In my mind, I think that's a weekly meeting for the next 4 weeks. And mm-hmm. we just dig in on the issues that we know we can tackle. So that's why the first email and request, you don't have to tell them all the details. You're just saying, I need a 30-minute check-in. I've got some mission critical items with urgency attached. When can I get 30 minutes in the next 4 days? Mm-hmm. It's Wednesday, before Friday. Ask if you can get it before Friday, unless he's on vacation or something else. See if you can get it before Friday. If that feels too much pressure, ask for Tuesday. But that's all you have to tell him. And then when you get in that call, you're not trying to fix anything in that 30-minute conversation. You're not trying to get decisions. All you're trying to do is, I need to agree on some way that we can resolve this list of things that I have here. I'm not asking you to resolve them on this phone call. I want to name what they are so that we can figure out how to resolve them. Mm-hmm. My request is that if there's anything we can do on this call, let's do it. But if not, let's have another 30 minutes in a week or another hour in a week. I think this is going to take at least an hour. And then next week, another hour. And then after that, we can reassess whether we need any more contact, you know, for a little while, but in order for me to do my job, I'm going to need a minimum of this level. Mm-hmm. And, if you think you might be going down the wrong path potentially, oh my gosh, I would want to know that as soon as humanly possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I know that there's things that need to be done for next year's events and
great. Okay, so here's what I'm going to ask you to do if you're up for this. I'm going to hop back over to Jeff. Jeff and I are going to have a conversation. You're going to be drafting two emails. After Jeff and I have had a little bit of a conversation, I'm going to come back to you. I'm going to ask you to read the emails to me. Is that okay? Before you send them.
Yeah.
You're up for this? Okay. Good.
I appreciate it.
The
live experiment.
You're like, I sure am. I know you want to punch me in the face just a little bit, but it's from a place of love.
No, it needs to be done. It's just,
I know it's hard, and that's why we're here to help you. We're gonna get you through this because I'm worried.
Yeah.
I'm worried for you now. Okay.
Well, I think my company just has a really difficult time with even managing down. Like, it's just, there's so much going on. And
clearly they do. Yeah, that's why you've got to take the line.
We have too much coming in at once as far as increasing staff, and all internal services are maxed out.
Look, you've got a bunch of warning lights going off. He's flying the plane. He's not seeing the warning lights. You're telling him your altitude is dropping fast. You think you're flying at 40,000 feet. You're now at 20,000 feet. You have a responsibility to provide him with that data. If you don't, you are failing to do your job. And you will be held accountable, not him. You'll be the one he'll look at and be like, you let me fly blind for this long?
Yeah.
Okay. We're good. I'm gonna let you take a few minutes to type and write, and then I'll get back to you in just a second. So,
okay.
Jeff, let's hop back over here. Let's talk marketing a little bit.
Yeah. So the marketing team, some of the frustration has been that I don't even know if it's really the marketing team, but they have, I don't know if they have a marketing staff of maybe 8 or 10 people. You know, it's a 540 person company. So they got a marketing staff of somewhere near a dozen. Everybody's a little bit of different of a specialist. So, when I first started here, I just wanted to get a simple maintenance plan because I'm very familiar, been in the HVA industry for 25 years. I've sold thousands of planes myself. I mean, it's nothing. And then everybody was critiquing every word. We'd have a meeting, maybe we should put maintenance instead of this, or maybe it should be air conditioning. Maybe, and it was just like so painful, like, because you're like, why are they analyzing it to that degree? Plus they wanted to do a plan for every different piece of equipment. So like oil fired, AC, I said, no, you just need, people don't read this stuff. Like, they just want to know that you're going to tune your system up, and you don't want guys walking around with 4 or 5 different types of, contracts and stuff. It's just very simple, And then they gave me an 11, it had to be at least 11 pages PowerPoint presentation that they wanted me to, I didn't even know this. It came to me. I didn't even know I was going to present. This is like, goes back about a month and a half ago. They called me into a meeting with all the 8 outside salespeople who are also going to be selling these maintenance plans. They're not even part of my team. They're part of a different team in the company, but they kind of cross sell the maintenance plan for us. Great. I thought they wanted me just to chip in, give them a little bit of color commentary. And they're like, go ahead, take off. And the PowerPoint came up. I hadn't even really looked at the PowerPoint. Anyway, the PowerPoint was like 13 pages long. Like, I would never talk about a maintenance plan. It would never take 11, 13 slides to talk about a maintenance plan. It's very easy, guys. It sells on reliability, safety, efficiency. That's it. We can make your system more reliable. You can make it safer. We can make it more efficient. Mm-hmm. That's it. And they wanted to overcome objections. They take everything in a very, weird approach. They just overdo it, So, when I put the maintenance plan out, copy out originally the first time, they critiqued the copy, came back. I sent it back in with some more corrections. They sent it back. I never even got the maintenance plan printed the first time. I never even got it printed. I went and had it. 6 weeks later, I never had it printed because, they just keep going at it. It's like the never ending edit, And for me, I would write copy and even if it wasn't all that professional. Our trade, first of all, it's not super high professional. You'd be surprised at actually how professional it is. It's not all filled by, blue collar workers who don't write professional copy. There's a lot of stuff out there that's really good, but it's not, you don't need to be critiquing it to that level to make it, to make something sell. So that's kind of the problem I'm having with marketing.
So is this marketing team a group of professionals who have experience selling what you're selling?
No.
What do they have experience selling?
Weatherization. Oh, I take that back. The guy that's in charge of marketing, Bill Graham, used to work for HomeServe, and they sold home warranties.
Okay.
So very close, like same thing, like, you know, but it was like low cost home warranties or something like that.
Great.
Yeah.
So, and you've talked to him about this?
Yeah.
And what is his response?
Well, he thinks that our maintenance plan is too pricey to begin with. I recommend that we sell it for $289. It's $289 to come out and take care of your whole system and do it the right way. So I call it, you know, a premier level service. It's a maintenance value plan, MVP. We treat you like the MVP. We don't come out and do a simple check on your system. You know, what I call a visual check. We just a net driver. We actually put instruments on there. We test the airflow. We're doing real work on your system to make sure that your system is running right. And so I've got a very simple bullet point that highlights that, you know, why have somebody come out and just do a simple check and then try to, you know, whatever, convert you to something different. We actually do a more thorough, you know, evaluation of your system and everything. But he's never been a big believer in that, because where he comes from, they sold these very low cost maintenance plans that were just a lead in to get more work. You know, that's the whole model. So he really doesn't buy into the whole higher end maintenance plan. And then, so I ended up doing low level maintenance checks for $79, $89, but I told him I would not call it a tune-up. I said, no, we're not going to call it a tune-up because we're not tuning the system up. We have to call it a maintenance check. And we have to make sure we bullet point that we're only doing a visual inspection. They wanted to push me into calling it a tune-up because they thought it would get better results. Everybody else is calling it a tune-up. Yeah, but everybody else is lying that it's not a tune-up. It's actually just a checkup. They're not really doing anything on your system. So, you know, that's been another point of contention. And like, it takes me, I was telling Chris, my boss, I said, I get off the meeting and one of the guys said it again. We already cleared this up when we did the AC low cost check, the $89 check. I pushed back, made sure that the word tune-up was out of all the copy. When it came time for fall stuff that we're going to release now in a couple weeks, everything had tune-up back in it. So then I'm back. How come we didn't look at the AC? I'm typing, oh, wait, you know, I thought in the AC season, we went through all this. We're not going to do tune-up. We're going to do checkup. And then we get on a call. I bring it up on the call. And they're dismissive. Bill, who's the director of marketing, says, I'm on a group call with all the other people. And I said, hey, by the way, I did notice the copy. It should say maintenance checkup, not tune-up. And he's like, yeah, I don't think that's really going to matter, Jeff. You know, we talked about that before. I really do understand your point. But, you know, I don't think that's a real big issue. So I get off the call. I have to write him an email. I have to get a hold of my guy who's on the front line who takes all the inbound phone calls, Kevin. I said, Kevin, do you have a problem when customers call up thinking it was a tune-up? Oh, absolutely. They hold our feet to the fire. All right. Can you send me an email letting me know, you know, your problems? I sent that email over to Bill and his team and said, these guys are going to deal with all kinds of problems. You can call it a tune-up. It needs to be called a checkup, you know? So it's that kind of stuff. I wouldn't be fighting any of that battle if I just went out and did my own postcard. Mm-hmm. Like, so I could have had that postcard done.
That's really a question of authority.
Yeah.
And Bill feels he has the authority to make those decisions unilaterally.
Yeah.
Is that right? Is that your read?
He tells me that he's there to service us. He goes, we're here for you. You know, this is what we're here for. We're here for, you know, we're your marketing team. We're here to serve you. But that's not really the way they conduct themselves. I have to push, you know, to get them lined up. They don't believe in some of the stuff I'm telling them. Mm-hmm. They think that they know better, but they're not on the front lines. I know what it's like when you go to a customer's home and it said tune up for 89. Even with the checkup, that's questionable. I have to make sure all my frontline people tell homeowners that, oh, he's going to come out and do a check on your system. It's just a visual inspection. If there's any really maintenance that needs to be done, he would actually give you the pricing for the maintenance, or if there's any repair work that needs to be done. Just want to make sure you understand this is a checkup. I don't want, you know.
So as part of module 4, mm-hmm. the double productivity and impact, that module, there is a, several videos on a RACI chart. I think you watched them.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
This is an ideal scenario to propose your vision for how that RACI chart would look and who on his team would weigh in at what level, who would consult and who would approve. And I would propose it in a way that he may or may not like, but it will force the conversation about who has what power and authority. So I've had to do this before, especially with marketing teams, internal marketing teams that are serving operations. There are certain things operations has to approve and marketing does not get to approve. Mm-hmm. And they hate it. But what it basically comes down to is, hey, look, we're the client, internal or external, we're a client and you're a service provider to me, the client. And that means that I have final authority and say over these matters. And if we fail, it's on me, not on you.
Right.
And so that's why I'm going to get the A. So, you know, in the RACI chart, you have who's responsible for doing the action.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they're the approver. It means that they're carrying something out. You have someone who consults, which means that no decision can be made until they are consulted with. And then they have the approve, which is these are the final deciders. Mm-hmm. And they must consult with the people who have a seat before they make a decision, but it is ultimately their decision to make. And a really good RACI chart is when you have only one A and you can never have more than one R. Only one R. And as rare as possible, more than one A. There are account systems and instances where two people really do have to approve something.
Right.
But you would want to build it in such a way that says, hey, this is just a piece to help us have a good conversation and get clarity about responsibility and authority.
Right.
Because I am accountable for these sales. That is not your accountability. That's true, right? Like, are you the one accountable for selling these things or not?
I don't know how that works.
Great.
That's what I want is great. Like,
then just assert it into the world as if it's true. Just be like, yeah, as the marketing department, you're not actually accountable for whether or not we sell. Right. I'm accountable for whether or not we sell. And right. What we know is that accountability and authority must match.
Right.
And so the chart that I'm showing you, and you would build the chart exactly as you want with the key steps involved, you know, copy, who's going to write the copy, who's responsible for it. Well, that's the marketing team. But ultimately you get to, but I'm the ultimate approver of that.
Right.
No decisions are made until I approve. And once I approve, the decision is made.
Right.
And here's what you have authority over. You get to approve this and this and this, but it ultimately comes to me and I approve it because you're accountable for generating creative content. I'm accountable for actually making sales.
Right.
So that means that I am the ultimate authority and the client in this instance.
Right.
And that tool is a great tool for facilitating that conversation.
All right. I like that. It's like, that's something that we need to, work on.
Yeah. And what that'll do is it will surface a conversation about power and accountability.
Right.
Which you want to surface it. He'll be like, what are you talking about? Of course I'm accountable. That's the reason I was hired. I've talked to my boss and he told me I was accountable. You go, oh, well, we need to clear that with the boss to see who's accountable, because whoever's accountable gets the A.
Right.
Because if you're not accountable for that and it's him,
right,
fine. Wash your hands of it and go, he's accountable. It's written in a document. We all know he's accountable. And when the boss gets angry and he needs to, you know, choke a throat, he's going to go and choke his throat, not your throat. And that's why that RACI chart is so powerful, especially in cross collaboration.
I think part of it is I haven't wanted to fail.
You know, yeah.
That's really what it boils down to. You know, not clearing this up has also been a fear of failure on my part. It's almost like sharing that, not knowing or whatever, because I'm not really the kind of person that, you know, would not confront something if I feel uncomfortable. So
what are you afraid of failing of in this case?
Well, if the copy doesn't work, if the copy didn't work, you know, if the postcard bombed compared to, again, I'm coming into a company that's got a 540 people, they've done very well at what they're doing. You know, Bill's got a pedigree in marketing that's supposed to be, you know, really good. And in this marketing team is supposed to be on point. So, you know, I ran a successful business, you know, did 20 million in sales, 85 employees or, you know, stuff like that. So it's like, I know what worked in the HVAC world, but when I come in here, I'm a little intimidated with building this marketing team. I've never, you know, had one marketing assistant. I worked with outside small marketing agencies.
Yeah.
That understood my business after a while. So it was very easy and fast for me to turn a piece out.
Yeah, yeah.
They understood what we were doing. After 2 years of work, or even a year of working with them, we got the branding down. We got the channels down. After that, it was just refreshing, exploring new channels, tweaking.
Yeah.
But I wasn't working with all these people critiquing my copy or, you know, in this whole big thing. And I think sometimes I think, well, what do they know that I don't know?
Yeah. That's a valid, by the way, I think that curiosity is valid for you. I think it's worthwhile staying really curious, but I still think you guys need to have an agreement over who's accountable and therefore who is the final authority.
Right.
And if you disagree over who's accountable, then it's got to be the boss that decides who's accountable. And if he says you're both accountable, fine, then you both got to approve. Right. But that means that he can't just unilaterally be like, yeah, it's a tune-up. You're like, I haven't approved that. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I don't like checkup. You're like, great, then we got to find a third way because we both have an A.
Right.
This isn't going to work. So we got to find a third way because you don't just get to unilaterally decide and neither do I. Or you agree, I'm accountable, so I get to unilaterally decide. And if I fail, I fail and it's on me.
Right.
And then you can decide, do I want to listen to Bill and his marketing expertise and try and experiment with him? Or I want to tell him he doesn't know what he's doing and I know more than him.
Yes.
Yeah. Then you can make that call. But the first conversation you need to have is who has what authority to do what and who's accountable. And it really starts who's accountable. Mm-hmm. Who is ultimately accountable? Once you have that, then you can go ahead and build the RACI chart. Mm-hmm.
I like the, at some point, I do want to hear your take on the psychology of working with marketing people, though, because that's always another interesting take.
Well, here's something I will say that's important for you to think about. Marketing is a really interesting discipline. Unlike HVAC or engineering or accounting, most of us are not consumers of engineering. Like it's an opaque discipline that most of us recognize has a body of knowledge and mastery. And we just respect, like, well, you're the engineer, you know better. Mm-hmm. Marketing is part art and also something we're all consumers of. So because we're consumers of it, we tend to think we can just do it because we see it all the time, unlike engineering, which is opaque and you can't see. And so the two things, one is subjective art and a lack of total transparency means that as a marketer, I was a professional marketer. I'm still a professional marketer. I consult with companies on marketing and I've been doing it for 20 years. And I helped launch Porsche's SUV to North America. I worked on computers, casinos, nonprofits, tech companies, tons of brands. And I do marketing strategy and all that, copywriting, headline, all that stuff. And what I know is I am often having to help leaders understand, like, that person says they're a marketer, they're not a marketer. And they don't know they're not a marketer because they haven't been doing it for very long, or they haven't done it in this industry. And that's a really important thing, especially people that have, I'm an expert marketer, which I would say I'm an expert marketer. Whenever I go into new industry, I assume I'm not an expert.
Right.
So I have no idea about this industry. I'm here to learn with you. I know human psychology. But like there are tons of idiosyncrasies about this industry that I don't understand. So I always come with a beginner's mind when I come into a new industry. So it is possible that Bill comes with an expert mind, which is like, I'm a marketer. I get it. I know everything. I'm just going to apply what I know to this new industry. And that's usually a terrible idea. Mm-hmm. It's also possible that Bill really does know what he's doing. He's been really curious. He's been researching, understanding them. Like a good marketer, first thing they will do is they'll go out and interview the actual customers. First thing they'll do is be like, who are the customers? What are the biggest challenges? I will assume I know nothing and I come with a total beginner's mind and I will take that data and that will inform how I make my decisions. So if he hasn't done that, you've actually done that. You've actually been out talking to the very customers that he's marketing to. Now, if he has not done that, that is your trump card. Mm-hmm. You say, look, Bill, how many times have you interviewed our customers about HVAC? Mm-hmm. How many people on your team have talked to our customers?
Right.
Well, we haven't, but we've talked to homeowners. Fine. Have you talked to them about our product and our service?
Right.
No, we haven't. Have you understood their pains in their language? Well, no, we haven't. Okay. Then until you do that, I'm going to ask you to trust me because I've actually done that. Mm-hmm. And here's what I can tell you. My experience is doing that. Now, if you guys with your expertise want to go out and do that, awesome. You'll be even better than I am. But truly, from a marketing standpoint, that is the most important thing that any marketer worth their salt will do first. If they don't, they are hacks. They don't know what they're doing. I would never market a product ever without first talking to at least 10 customers. Minimum 10 customers.
Funny you say that, because the best copywriter I worked with worked for Ogilvy. That's where he cut his teeth.
Yep.
But then when I hired him, the very first thing he did was interview all my customers. We recorded the conversations, picked out key pain points. The number one marketing campaign that we came out with, I won't tell you, I'll get into it, but that was the most successful marketing campaign we ever had because it came right out of the customer's mouth.
Boom. That is exactly, like, guess what? The landing page that got you into my marketing funnel, do you know how I wrote that copy and everything about it? I've been talking to hundreds of leaders and I've been asking them, what's your biggest challenge? What's your vision? What's your biggest fear? What do you need? And I build everything to reflect back what I hear people say. That is essential work. So I'd even say that's your first conversation with Bill is, hey, Bill, we're at odds here a little bit. I want to have a conversation about a race you chart. But before I even do that, I want to know how many people of our customers have you already talked to? Because that is job number one of any good marketer.
Right.
And I trust you're a great marketer, but I don't know if you've talked to our customers.
Right. Perfect. I like it. The ratio chart and everything. So that's good. Yeah. Good info.
Okay. Now, welcome, Lisa. I will get to you in just a minute. I'm going to go back to Michelle here. Michelle, how are we feeling?
Yeah, no, this is fine. I'm keeping it very vanilla. But my question is, if I have an outstanding issue regarding my contract, is that a good tactic to tag team off a previous email?
No, I think you know, 20 things going on. You need to talk, you need to alert him to all of them, and you need to do it in a conversation. So I think, let me hear the emails and I'll see if we need to add some more spice to it. If you say it's vanilla.
Yeah, it's vanilla. It's, are you available for a 15 to 30 minute meeting in the next week to remain coordinated on potential acquisitions and other topics that affect the housing department? I'd like to review a few things, sometimes sensitive, to make sure I'm steering the housing department in the right direction.
That's good.
Because if I give too much, he will shoot back an answer on that one topic and totally consider it done.
In fact, I was going to say, take some of that out and be even more high level. I don't even need to think. Simply like, well, what do you need to talk about with the housing thing? Or no, I'm not telling you what I need to have a conversation with you. It's mission critical. Has to be a voice to voice or face to face. And I would give him a date. The one thing missing in there is there's no date.
Oh, I just said in the next week, but I'll put by next.
Yeah.
Thursday.
We need to have this conversation before next Thursday, if possible. You know, that's kind of some of the matters are urgent.
Right. And, you know, we have a bi-monthly or semi-weekly. I'm never sure if I'm saying that right. It's every 2 weeks management meeting that is scheduled for tomorrow, which is 5 hours away from me. However, always happy to go up there and be there in person, but sometimes it just gets canceled the morning of. So right. I've been very hesitant to just constantly show up and really waste a lot of time when we're always behind. Yep. And that is one of the biggest challenges I've had, is I need much more in-office space time. We were lacking in space because of the amount of people that were being hired. So part one of the conversations that's going to be part of this conversation is I need space to sit, and I'll be here
right.
3 days out of every 10.
Right. All of that's useful. Just make a list of all the things you know you need to talk about them with. Make sure that you don't try to drain the cup on that first 30-minute call. I would tell them you need 30 minutes also. That's something that's missing. Give them a timestamp. Timestamp and date. Allow a leader to make choices about priorities.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't give a time, if you just say a conversation, they're like, is that 2 hours, 1 hour, 30 minutes, 15 minutes? I have no idea. I'm not going to think about it until I get all these other things done. But if you say it's going to take 30 minutes, he's like, good. I know where that lives in my world.
Mm-hmm.
Add that. You okay. also wanted the assistant.
I did, but I really just don't know if it's her job.
So
everything is so fluid that, you know, I just asked her for the agenda for tomorrow's meeting, thinking, you know, maybe I could actually get a handle on if it's actually happening. Mm-hmm. And also, are you scheduling meetings for Dave? If you are, I'd like to get a 30-minute meeting with him by next Thursday.
Perfect. Excellent.
So, yeah, I know these are simple communications, but the lack of clarity is endless on who, you know, I requested of someone in charge of operations to have a weekly, you know, a standing meeting, and she canceled those through Outlook, just wiped them off all the calendars without even a follow-up email as to why. You know, it's just an ongoing, you know.
Totally get it.
I feel like a fish out of water, and it's the most uncomfortable I've been ever. And I've done some uncomfortable things, believe it or not.
I knew that part of what makes you uncomfortable is that you haven't forced these meetings. So this is actually doing great. Add the 30 minutes. And then right now on this call, let's click send on both.
I will. I promise. I have someone in the driveway that I need to send off to a camping trip and make sure she has her lantern and her fire extinguisher and her fire starter both together in one place.
I'm going to talk to Lisa, then you'll come back here and we'll send.
Yes. Her. Yes, I will. Okay. Awesome. Great.
All righty. Lisa, welcome. How are you? Well, you're on mute.
Sorry. There we are. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanks. Very good.
Good. Sorry, I was late to the party.
That's okay. That's okay. How did your, did you end up having a conversation with the woman who wanted her job back?
She ended up coming down with COVID, so we did not have a conversation yet.
Okay.
So it has been postponed. COVID is really, really, really kind of all over the place right now, around here anyways. So it's adding to the the situation.
And how have your stand-up meetings been going?
We had our first one on Friday. We ended up having it on Friday. I printed out some really cute cards with our logo on it and everything. Passed them out Thursday afternoon, gave instructions, you know, really pumped it up. I had one teacher that was really concerned. She says, you know, I think you should have just had us all draw names so everybody gets a card. And, you know, because if I don't get a card, I'm going to get my feelings hurt. And, of course, you know, I just kind of left it as it was. The sad thing about it is we only had four people fill out a card, period. I had hem-hawed whether or not I should have filled out a card for everybody or not, but I realized we were focusing on, you know, peer-to-peer recognition and not my recognition. So I didn't fill out a card right then. I was kind of tempted to fill out a card and put it in their mailbox or, you know, something, you know, more on a one-on-one basis. But I think, you know it's new, so I'm trying to be patient, but it was, again, that's kind of the response I get from them is, you know, Lisa's doing something and, you know, it's asking me to do something, even if it's just to put a compliment on a card. They seem to just kind of, you know, I don't know. What's your take on that? Just keep it going and just build momentum and just go. So I'll hand out cards again today. It's Wednesday, and say, hey, make sure you're looking for something. And eventually, you know, right now they're the ones that did it were complimentary on the people that work with them in their classroom. So I think after next week, I'll say, okay, it can't be anybody that works in your class. You have to branch out a little bit.
And so the question is, do they have enough visibility to have anything complimentary to say to someone they're not working with?
They do. Okay. They do. Okay. Yeah.
Then, so I'd make a few changes.
Okay.
One is that, if you're going to do peer recognition, you would require everybody to grab a card and take 2 minutes and do their best to think about someone they want to recognize. It's not someone, it's recognize.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what's something you want to recognize that they have about how they reflect our values as an organization?
Mm-hmm.
say compliments on the face nice, you're going to leap. The next thing you're going to say to something you want to happen in the organization. I'm getting some food to the
bathroom. Make sense? Yes. Yeah, so let me show you what the card looks like.
Perfect. Yeah, that's great.
Hold on. Let me grab one, Addy. I put them in the resource room so anybody could grab one. Let me turn my camera around.
Are they physically sitting or standing when you have this meeting?
They're standing because we're kind of doing a little rally before they go back to the classroom. So
okay, got it. All right. So this is
So you can see it's got on there made my day, child's day or parents' day, fully present, brought the fun, best attitude, and they're able to put their name at the top and then fill in the card and
I think that's
logo on there.
That's excellent. I mean, you've done a great job there. Okay. So that's a great card. I think that's exactly what you should do. And it's good for them to fill it out and stand there and just give them, you know, two minutes. Definitely need to be recognizing someone. Each mm-hmm. you've got to be recognizing someone. You mm-hmm. become like a peer with them. So you're like, okay, everybody's going to choose somebody. We're going to recognize. Look, if some week somebody gets 10 cards, that's just the way it is. It's going to happen. Your job is to monitor. If some person keeps getting the same cards, you're going to start recognizing people that don't get cards. And what starts happening is over time, people begin to self-moderate when you ensure you require everybody. It's not optional. You say everybody's going to take a card and everybody's going to take 2 minutes to reflect on our values and who anybody you see who lived out that value. And just start, you're going to do that for 4 weeks. It's weekly, right? Is that how
it is? It's weekly.
You're going to do that for 4 weeks. Everybody's required to do it and you do it too. And you're going to be noticing and monitoring. And when people come with complaints, you say, hey, I can appreciate that. Stick with me. And I believe that over time, everybody's going to get noticed and rewarded. But the other thing you want to think about is great. You know, we're all working on the same thing. And I encourage you to trust that you're going to get recognized.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So you're saying that I should fill out a card as well?
Yeah, just like you're a peer and just be like, oh, today I'm recognizing this person. Really appreciated they did this. I saw them live out that value. And then the next person, they go, oh, I want to recognize this person. They lived out this. They did this. Awesome. Next person, give them the card, right?
Okay. Then
one, after 4 weeks, if you want, you can start collecting the cards. Mm-hmm. And enter people into drawings.
Right.
You can tell them you're going to get these cards back. Or what you can do is you can take the cards and post them on a public wall mm-hmm. so that everybody walking by can see all the people that were recognized.
Yeah, I like that too.
And then you give it back to them so they can have the card when they're done. So you go, for this week, all the cards are posted. And then at the end of the week, I'm going to hand them back out to all of you. Or I'm going to take them all down, enter them into a drawing, pick a winner. That winner is going to get $10 gift card, $25 gift, doesn't matter. Pick a thing. Mm-hmm. And then everybody's going to get the cards back. And you begin to create an ecosystem and a currency of rewards and recognition. Just so you know, this happens in Fortune 100 companies that are hard charging, aggressive, you know, masculine. This is not just for like warm and fuzzy teachers. This is a human phenomenon. That when you recognize people and link those behaviors to values, you are creating culture. So here's how you build a magnetic culture. Rituals, tools, and processes. Rituals are repeating patterns that you perform. That's your stand-up weekly meeting. A tool is this little card that they literally, the physical card is a tool that they have to write their names on and write things on. A process is you post all of that. You gather it into a jar and hand it back out to everybody. Rituals, tools, and processes. These are concrete behaviors that if you repeat over time, your culture begins to build a sense of cohesion. It's no longer just words on a wall or words on a piece of paper that you say you believe and nobody else cares about. They start to witness.
You broke up. Okay. Yeah, we will proceed and hope to have better response next week. The other thing we do, and we've done this for a few months now, is we have had them draw every pay period a support team member. And we have a book where they have all their likes and, you know, favorites and everything. So they go in there and they see what their favorite is and they kind of support them. But I do change it every pay period. Our pay periods are monthly, so it takes a month. And so that, you know, I've seen.
I'm sorry, you're requiring they take money from their paycheck to give to a cost?
No, it doesn't have to be anything that costs money.
Oh.
That's not necessary.
Oh, okay.
No. I'm not telling them you have to go buy them something. But it, you know, it does have, you know, their favorites and things like that, so they know, you know. But most people just want a card or, you know, something, you know, warm and fuzzy or something like that. But no, it's not anything they have to pay. They can come up with, you know, something that doesn't cost any money at all.
Got it. Okay. So a couple of things I just want you to manage your expectations.
Okay.
You are setting the tone.
Mm-hmm. So
you showing up with confidence and warmth and appreciation and expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And you just sort of be like, we're doing this. This is happening. We're going to be doing this now.
Mm-hmm.
People will just start getting on board. And when you say, hey, everybody has to participate, no exception. Everybody's mm-hmm. got to one card at least. Great. Start doing that consistently and repeatedly. And then I want you to come back to me next week and see how it went. And it's okay if weeks and people aren't happy, or we'll keep adjusting as we need to. But definitely you're on the right track. And it's just going to take some time to get people warmed up and bought into this. And at first, they're going to be rolling their eyes and wondering why they have to do it. And I guarantee you, if you do that for 6 months, people aren't rolling their eyes anymore. They're like, this is a major, if then try to take it away from them.
Now that will be exciting. I will like that a lot.
Yeah,
for sure.
That is what has happened in cultures and organizations that I've worked with. And there have been new leaders that have come in and been like, I don't want to do this anymore. And they stop it. And they get like a huge reaction from the team. They're like, why are you stealing our culture? Why would you destroy it?
Yep. That's awesome, Shane. Good. I really like that.
Good. Awesome. Okay. We're doing the exact thing that I know you're going to need that's going to help you build culture.
Perfect.
Awesome. Let's go back. I'll come back to you in just a minute, Lisa. Just check. Is Michelle there? Are you still there, Michelle?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did everything get sorted?
No. No. So I have to jump, but no, I, my daughter is heading out for camping. They really shouldn't be camping by themselves, but yet they are. And all I mean, right. they're fine to camp, but I, you know, had this, I expect us to be completed by now, and I do have to take care of that. But yeah, I have my email ready to go, and absolutely, it's something I have been putting off, and it's such a big topic.
So why you haven't know? You sent it?
Because I've been outside. Oh, I mean, in general.
No, just, that's okay.
It's such a big topic. It's just like every time. I think I've built my own company, and now I'm back into feeling like almost like a child again, and, you know, having accountability and responsibility not match up for what, you know, my authority and just all of this other stuff. It's just such a big topic. I probably need 2 hours with him, if not 8 days. So it's,
which is be really clear, that 30 minute call with your app is another several hours.
Yeah.
I'm not looking to resolve it all. My interest in this conversation. And Lisa, could you go ahead and mute your phone again while you're walking? Thanks. So all you're doing is really asking for.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is I never feel prepared because I'm constantly in the weeds and trying to figure out it's just been a big challenge. So absolutely today will not pass without doing that because it's ready to go. So,
okay. All right.
Yeah. Good. But I will sign off, as I think we are done, are we not?
You can be done, yeah. I mean, I'll stand for another 10 minutes just in case others want to check in on anything else. But wishing you all the best. Click send.
Okay. All right. I will. I am. Thank you. Okay. Awesome. Bye.
Bye. All right. Lisa or Jeff, other things you guys want to connect on, talk about? Got 10 more minutes, 9 minutes.
Well, Lisa came on after me, so if you've got some stuff.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Shane, I think I sent you, I don't know if it got to you or not, I think I sent you some text messages that I had with an employee. And I'm struggling with, you know, the professionalism of it, showing empathy, and but also not being, you know, at the mercy of my employees. Did you by chance get to see those?
I'm actually looking right now and trying to understand, like, did you email it or text it to me?
I emailed it to you.
Emailed it to me. Let me just see. If for some reason, I didn't again. And Shane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get those for some reason. Let me see here. Hang on a minute. Nope, I did not get that.
Okay. It's been, I think I sent it maybe probably Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. Maybe even Monday. I may have sent it Monday. Let me pull up my email real fast and I'll see if I can.
Yeah, the last email I have from you is dated August 11th. And it's, it's just your
report. Okay. Yeah, it looks like it didn't get sent. Darn, because I really was wanting, granted, I don't know that.
Can you show me on your screen right now, or can you email it now and I'll call it up?
Yeah. So you wanted to go to Shane at Shane Hips?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay. Sending it now. So this has happened a couple of times, especially with dealing with COVID. I had a teacher that came down with COVID. Since we're in the, we're considered first responders as far as that category goes, we're supposed to quarantine for 10 days and then you can come back. And so with the first teacher that it happened to, of course, this was the first time it happened. I counted 10 days and I put her on the schedule. And of course I checked on her a couple of times, you know, how are you doing? That kind of thing. But, I didn't really say, you know, you need to be back on Friday. So that was an oversight on my part. It turned into a big, huge, drama. Because the other teacher in the room had messaged her and said, hey, you know, Lisa's got you coming in on Friday. And of course she's saying, oh no, I'm not coming back until Monday. And of course, then that teacher was all upset because she was having to work and pull that teacher's load for her to be out. And so I ended up losing both teachers out of that scenario. So this last one, you know, I had texted her, checked on her several times, called her, that kind of thing. I let her know days ahead that, hey, I'm going to put you on the schedule for Monday. And she's like, well, don't I need to get retested? And of course, you know, they're really, really not wanting people to take up tests. After 10 days, you're not supposed to be contagious. So, you know, it's not necessary to get a test. Not to mention, you might still test positive for, you know, months down the road. And so, you know, going with the test is not necessarily the best avenue as far as getting you back to work. And so I explained that to her, gave her a link showing her that, you know, she didn't have to retest. But she still dug in and said, you know, I'm going to retest. So refused to come to work on Monday. And basically told her that, you know, that's fine. If that's what you're feeling you need to do, just know I've got to go ahead and cover the classroom this week. So, you know, I'm not going to put you on the schedule until you get the results and I figure out, you know, where we're going to need you. And of course, again, how do you handle that where they're just basically telling you that I don't care what you say, I'm going to do what I want to do. And of course, she comes in and she says, you know, I just basically wanted to really clean my house really good. And I'm like, well, that's not a new reason not to come to work. Yeah, because again, we've got everybody covering for you. So again, I just wanted to run that by you because it keeps coming back up. I keep having the same type conversations. I'm trying to be clearer every time, trying to show empathy, understanding. But at the same time, you know, I need them to let me be the boss and let them know that, hey, I got to be able to cover the classroom and not continuously have this problem. So, whoops, your feedback on that is really appreciated.
So, it sounds to me that it's similar to the kind of conversation we had last week, which was around asserting strongly the behavior you expect while respecting that people can have different beliefs.
Yes.
So that's a big one, is just acknowledging like you've got to behave, you got to be able to state that clearly to them. And then there's also probably going to need to be, like, for you, you've got to figure out where you have teeth and the ability to create a sense of consequence, a cost associated with it. So again, as long as you're not threatening safety, you know, all that stuff, then it's something that you can absolutely enforce. If what you're doing is encroaching on their belief about safety, for example, if you were to say you're not allowed to wear a mask, that would be encroaching on their beliefs about safety. And so that'll cause major problems. If you're saying you can't come back to the class because you might be sick, that's appropriate because you're protecting people. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think the first thing is you've got to get clear on two things. One is this a matter of encroaching on their safety? And two is, how do I protect their safety and manage my responsibility? And you make that clear to them also. You're like, look, you've expressed a safety concern for you. And if I understood it right, by the way, there was some complexity there and I was looking for your email at the same time. So I don't know all the details. Did you send me the email just now or no?
Yes, I did. Did it not come through?
Still not seeing it.
Oh, gosh, Shane.
I don't know what's going on here. Let me just send you a quick email test from that email. Yeah. Okay. I just sent you a test email from that email address. Have you been getting my regular emails, like the weekly reminders and things like that?
Yes.
Okay. So it's at least going through on your end. It could be a server issue from you coming to me. It just is delayed. Because you're saying the last one technically wasn't sent. Is that correct?
Well, I'm going to forward this to you. Well, I think the other thing that I'm wanting guidance on is, you know, the appropriateness of having conversations like this through text.
Absolutely not. Yeah, these are voice-to-voice. There is such complexity here that you would take the initiative to have a voice-to-voice conversation about this.
Okay.
Yeah, that shouldn't be debated over text.
I think that's the issue is, you know, once it starts getting into a back and forth, the best thing to do would be then to pick up the phone and say, hey, let's have a conversation. And
absolutely. Yeah, that's my first. I didn't realize it was over text because I haven't seen the email. So I would have obviously shown the text. I didn't know that.
I think my struggle is there is, you know, text is, you got documentation. versus voice to voice, you don't, but it gets, it's not very professional and it's not very warm and fuzzy. So
my high recommendation on how you balance that. You have a first a voice to voice conversation, then you follow up with a text message or an email that confirms the conversation, what the agreement was.
Okay.
You just follow up and say, hey, I just want to follow up and confirm with you, make sure we share the same understanding. An email is even more professional than a text.
Certainly.
Search it more easily. So if you're trying to document something, I recommend you document over email. And that way it's easier for you to find, easier for them to find when you have a dispute down the road. And if that was your primary concern is you want documentation, just follow up with documentation.
Okay.
Okay, so hopefully I'll get your email. I'm a little concerned that I'm not getting it. I'm glad you're getting mine.
Yes.
I just sent you a test email again. So if you don't get that, that's important. But
okay,
good. Well, I think we're kind of about at time.
Okay.
Anybody else? Jeff, anything else you want to check in on?
Nope, we're good.
Okay. Thanks again. I'm looking forward to hearing how your conversations go and how you make use of all these things. And
okay.
We'll talk next week.
All right. Have a good week.
All right. My shame.
Bye. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.